Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're listening to the Fade to Gray Network.
Ladies and idiots,
this is the Fade to Gray Podcast.
I ended up finding out what transgender was when I was 17, I want to say. And it was something that I immediately was like, yes, this is me. It was weird. There were times where I was in the room with like 8 people, and there were 3 different lies going, and everyone would just keep them going, keep them continuing.
What do you think about the Fade to Gray Podcast?
It sucks.
Nice. We out.
We out.
Welcome back to another episode of Fade to Gray, where we're doing the relationship series here. We have gone from vanilla to chocolate to all flavors in between. And today, we have this very special guest, a friend of the family. He's a Patreon member. I met him through another podcast called Your Atheist Pastor with Stephanie. Go check that out. I'm not sure what number Nick's episode is, if you want to get more of any of his backstory, but he goes into a lot more detail of his story there and his conversion from growing up in a conservative Christian background to kind of like what he thinks about God now. Might ask him a couple questions about that. But Nick is a trans man, which means that he was born female and has transitioned to male. And let me tell you guys, if I had not listened to his episode with Your Atheist Pastor, I never would have known, because he is definitely passing. We're going to talk about dating and I believe marriage and divorce and all points in between. So, Nick, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be on. I've been listening to the show a lot more recently since knowing all of you guys, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been great.
It's been great having you around, man. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for being able to open up and give us a peek into your life and talk about relationships and dating. So, first of all, for those, just catch us up real quick. Who you are, a little bit of your background. Maybe what you do for a living, and then you've been married before, so yes. Tell us about that as well.
A little bit about me. At least right now, I just turned 25 last month. Work as a McDonald's manager. That's pretty recent. I just got another job at a donut shop, which is pretty exciting because who doesn't love donuts? And as you said, I've transitioned from female to male, and I have been married and divorced. Well, actually, technically, I'm not legally divorced. I'm still separated. So,
were you transitioned before you got married?
Not physically, but I definitely knew. And but my ex-wife was actually very understanding with that. Very helpful with that, especially, with the body dysphoria and things like that. So, I am grateful to her for that.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about that. So how old were you when you got married?
21.
21. And you were knowing that transitioning is something that you were, something you were thinking about at least. How long were you guys dating before you decided to get married?
We started dating when I was 18. So three years.
Okay. And during that whole period, obviously that's an interesting period for anybody in their adolescence. You know, you're just graduating from high school and all the pressure you have of the peer pressure from that. And you're just kind of just trying to discover who you are as an individual. That happens naturally for anybody at that age. But you guys are dating and what's that like as you're going through, like you already knew at that point too what you're going to be doing in the future with?
Yeah. At this point I was in my second semester of high school for senior year, and I had a very religious upbringing, and I went to a private Christian school from kindergarten through eighth grade. Obviously, I had no idea that being transgender was possible. I didn't know what it was. And I ended up, finding out what transgender was when I was 17, I want to say. And it was something that I immediately was like, yes, this is me. This is what I am. So the thing is, I wasn't in a relationship at that time, so I didn't really have to deal with that right away. But when I started dating my ex-wife, I told her about it right away, because I'm like, you know what, I don't want to end up in a relationship where this is going to be a problem down the road. So I told her, and she was very supportive. She said that, you know, if that's who I am, that's who I am. She called me Nick. But I didn't go through any outward change until after high school, because at that point I was like, I'm so close to graduating, I don't want to try to change that in the middle of high school. I don't want to try to go to all my teachers and explain that. I don't want to face, you know, the people that have been calling me something else for, you know, over half the time I was there. And then suddenly the last semester I'm there, try to change it all. So I was like, I'll just wait till college. And
that could be hard. I could see that.
Yeah. So I was like, I'll just wait till college. And but she was supportive of that. Herself, she called me Nick in school, outside of school. She introduced me as Nick to her family. They all knew, but, you know, at the same time, they were also very accepting and stuff like that. And it was great. They were very welcoming. And
what was that like being raised in a conservative family? And I know a little bit about your story with your dad. And again, if you guys go check out Your Atheist Pastor, we'll have in the show notes the number, because he numbers all of us. I think it was 332.
I think it was 335, but it could be 32. 330 something.
It's right in that area, guys. So, and they're all good. So check them out.
Yeah. I think the title is My First Lesson Was About Hell. So if that helps.
So you are in high school, you're 17 years old, you're dating this young lady, she's very accepting. Her parents are very accepting. What's that like coming from, like, having a dad who, you know, pretty much is willing to disown you for your choices to, like, another set of parents who are willing to just love you and accept you the way you are?
It was very different. I mean, yes, I was obviously happy with it, and it was a wonderful feeling. A little part of me, though, I won't lie, was kind of suspicious of it all. Mainly, I think, because I feel my upbringing was, you know, close-knit, we love you type of family, but really not. So, you know, part of me was like, oh, maybe they're just kind of pretending for now, or maybe this will be an issue later. But, I mean, for the most part, it wasn't, which was pretty good. But overall, it was a nice feeling to have that acceptance.
Wow. I'm just imagining a young Nick in high school, like hearing for the first time from his friends that transgender is even a thing, because you've been sheltered even from that even being a possibility or reality for you, you know, and then from that into finding this person who obviously, I don't want to get too far into the story, but obviously you guys, you know, started discussing marriage at some point, you know, and you're being accepted by their family as one of their own. So how long did you guys date before, you know, you knew that this is who you're wanting to, I guess, potentially spend your life with? It's supposed to be what they tell you. What do you think?
A year, which a year. Yes. But when we got engaged, I did tell her that I kind of wanted a longer engagement, and I, you know, am willing to put in the work and effort for it to just be us, obviously, and to work towards marriage, because I did want to work towards marriage, but I did want us to take a little bit of time, you know, get our finances in order and have a place, you know, actually have like a house, you know, not just be in like apartments or something like that, before we got married. And, you know, she agreed to that, which turned out to not happen.
So you guys had a plan to like have a long engagement. And then, so what changed that plan then?
She just kept bugging me to get married.
So did you have like a nice formal wedding with like friends and family, or was it shotgun sort of wedding at the courthouse?
We had at the courthouse. We had some friends and family, but you know, it was a courthouse wedding, which I didn't want, but she did.
That was my next question. Yeah. So you were one of the more traditional type of wedding.
No, not like it's, I mean, it didn't really matter to me where or how. It's just at that point, I mean, I guess I'll be honest, I knew it was a mistake, but for some reason I did it anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what was the, was it just a gut feeling, or were there some red flags that, let's talk about that a little bit. Like, what was the intuition that was doing that?
It was definitely a gut feeling, but I justified it to myself as, it wasn't as long of an engagement as I wanted it to be, but you know, she is someone that I do want to be with forever. So, you know, maybe, you know, she's waited at this point almost 4 years. So I'm like, maybe, you know, that's my fault. I just didn't feel we were 100% ready, but, you know, I went ahead and I did it because she kept saying, let's do it. You know, this, that, the other thing. And, another thing that she always wanted as well was a baby, which obviously for me is not something I could just make happen. That caused some slight issues as well. But I also told her I wanted to wait until we were after marriage for that. So I think that's another reason why she kept pressing for the marriage.
So how long before that gut feeling started becoming a reality? Like, I'm sure there was a honeymoon period for a period of time. And so when did that like start to become more than a gut feeling?
Pretty quickly, within probably about 6 months after we got married.
And it was just like irreconcilable. It was just like irreconcilable differences, or?
No, the relationship got kind of verbally and mentally abusive and manipulative. And after a while, it was just something that I did not want to be in, and I could not handle very well. So I left.
Sorry about that. Sorry to hear that.
Oh, it's all right. It's in the past.
All right. So 6 months in, started getting kind of nasty. You started being attacked, but you stuck with it for another 2.5 years.
A year and a half.
Did you guys, horrible at math. I feel like Chris right now. did you guys try counseling, or was there, so like, were you able to talk about, obviously, like, this isn't okay, you know, you can't speak to me in this way. Like, was there any sort of mediation whatsoever?
I tried for all of that. We had conversations, you know, where I told her, you know, that I didn't like how she spoke to me about this, or, because it's going to get brought up. Her specifically, but the whole family had issues with lying. Not just to other people, but to each other as well. Even on things that there was no reason to lie about. Like, something as simple as, you know, oh, you went to the gas station, then you came home. And you're like, yeah, that's all we did. But, you know, like, maybe we stopped at the library for a second. Or, or maybe the opposite, where, you know, she'd be like, oh, we went to this place, we went to that place, and it was great, and she would tell them stories, and I'm like, we never did that.
It almost seems like they're lying just to avoid conflict in any sort of way. It's just like,
no,
it's just
they would make up lies to create conflict as well.
Huh. Okay. Well, I was thinking maybe it was one of those things where they're just like, yeah, sure. That's, you know.
No, they were, they would like say like, oh, you know, Christy, the mom, her mom, you know, said this about Heather, the older sister, and, you know, this, that, the other thing. And then that would cause issues between the mom and Heather. And you
know, wow, that's weird.
Yeah. Just that. And it would be, I guess, kind of. It was weird. There were times where I was in the room with like 8 people and there were 3 different lies going and everyone would just keep them going, keep them continuing. And it got to the point where I had so many problems just trying to keep the original story straight, because I'm like, I don't even know what's going on anymore.
Your head was just spinning.
Yeah.
All right. So what was that like then once you knew, okay, you know, what was there a final straw, or was there?
Yeah, there were a couple. As time went on in the marriage, I realized, because I kept thinking to myself, like, she would never lie to me, or at least not lie to me about important things. But then I realized that she was. And then she started staying out for a certain amount of time and coming home late after I left for work, or leaving as soon as I got home from work, so she wouldn't be around. She wouldn't really tell me who she was with. She couldn't drive, so I usually took her places, and I took her to a therapy session every week. And when we started having problems, she would tell me things that, you know, she would tell her therapist, and her therapist would say back about our issues. And she just kept coming back out saying that her therapist told her that she thinks that I am manipulative and abusive to her. And I'm like, well, that sucks. Because, you know, I was wondering if you could ask your therapist if maybe I could come in and talk to her about, you know, like, because my ex-wife had suffered some sexual abuse as a kid, without going too much into that. And I didn't really know how to help in certain situations during flashbacks, things like that. So I was, you know, thinking that maybe if I could talk to her therapist for a session, maybe I could ask how are ways that I could help her and be a better partner for someone who went through sexual abuse, you know, especially because, you know, if we're having sex and she has a flashback and she starts crying, you know, like how am I supposed to be the best for her in that situation? But she, you know, kept saying that she doesn't think that's a good idea because her therapist thinks that I was abusive. And then other times, you know, like she would tell me, oh, we went to this place. You know, one time she told me that the apartment complex opened the swimming pool for the year. And she's like, oh, I'm going there with, you know, the family. Okay, cool. But then I received an email from the complex saying that they, you know, apologized because they couldn't open the pool and that they'll let us know when the pool is open. And I asked a couple of other friends of ours that were in the building as well. And I was like, hey, did you guys go to the pool yesterday? And they're like, oh, yeah, but, you know, it was closed, so we came back. So I asked her again, you know, like, how was the pool yesterday? Oh, it was great. I heard all these stories about her and, you know, our nieces and nephews at the pool. And so I showed her the email, and, you know, I asked again, you know, where were you? And she insists that they were at the pool.
Hmm.
And, so I told her, you know, that other people said that the pool was closed yesterday. And she said, I don't know what to tell you. We were there all day. So, all right. And then my mom had a cancer scare for a moment. And, you know, I was stressing about it. My mom was obviously stressing about it. And one day I came home and my ex-wife says that she was talking to my mom on the phone and they were talking about, you know, whatever. But that my mom said something along the lines of, now that I might have cancer, when are you guys going to give me a grandchild? And that really, really scared me and messed me up because, you know, I'm not having a kid for just my wife at this point. You know, like, I, you know, if anything's going to push me over the edge to go ahead and try to do that, it would probably be my mom. And so that messed me up for a couple of days. And I went to go have lunch with my mom to talk about it. And my mom ended up yelling at me in front of everyone at this restaurant about how silly that was, how stupid that was, how I'm not ready for a child. I can't financially support a child. What would make me think it would be a good idea for me to have a child? And that's when I told her, I was like, well, you know, so she said that that's what you told her on the phone. And then she looked at me and she said, I have been spoken to your wife in months.
Wow.
So that at that point, I told her, you know, I think I'm going to get a divorce. And she was like, why? You've only been married for a year and a half. And I was like, because, and I ended up just unloading to my mom. I told her about, you know, the horrible things that my wife had said to me, the things that, you know, she has been having me do, the lies that she has told me, and that I just couldn't do it anymore. And I fell back into a very bad self-harm, I guess, depression state at that point. And, you know, I told my mom, I was like, I can't stop because every time I go home, we fight and I don't want to fight, but she keeps following me around and she, you know, calls me all these names and she says these things because my ex-wife wanted to be a housewife. And I told her that wasn't a problem as long as she was a housewife, right? You know, clean the house, take care of the dog, make food. But I would come home from working two jobs to support us and the house would be a mess. And the dog would be freaking out to go outside, be nothing to eat. So I would end up cooking and cleaning and walking the dog and stuff like that. And because she couldn't drive, driving her wherever she wanted to go. And there were some times where, you know, because all she did was watch TV, so she would be bored a lot, where I would come home and she would want to have sex. And I was tired. And I would tell her no. And it got to the point where we were having so many fights where I just didn't want to be with her because I wanted to just have some space and time. But she got to the point where when I would tell her no, she would either start crying and saying that I think that she's ugly or something like that. Or she would start crying and saying things like, you know, it's because of her abusive past, you know, that happened to her that I don't want to touch her. And which also wasn't the case. Or she would get mean about it and then be like, what kind of man doesn't want to have sex? And that would really fuck with me because, you know, then I felt like I had to prove myself because, you know, I'm a man. And then I would.
It's like she knew which strings to push. And like if one button wouldn't work, she'd try another button, you know, to get the reaction that she wanted to get from you.
Yeah. And it got to the point where she would have me end up begging her to have sex, even though I didn't want to at all. And, you know, she would make me work for it. And so I told all this to my mom and, you know, my mom said that she had no idea and I should get a divorce. So she agreed with me. And so I think I waited for about a month because I was still kind of unsure. I was like, you know, maybe we can make this work. But throughout the whole last year, I went to her several times saying, we need to fix this. We need to fix that. And she would be good for a week or two. And then it would just go right back to what it was before. And at the very beginning of our relationship, because we were young and stupid and didn't know shit about shit, she and I really wanted that whole like BDSM type of relationship. But the older I got, the less I wanted to actually live it out 24/7. Because, you know, responsibilities in life. But I think because she never, you know, really started life and just mostly stayed at home, she kept wanting that. And one of our fights at the very end of our marriage constantly was her saying that I was not abusive enough to her. And I told her that's because I don't want to be. And I don't want that. But, you know, that was one of her biggest complaints about me, even though, you know, I guess it's a bad thing to her therapist, but.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, there should be like some, you know, group or couple therapy going on. And it's like, it's interesting that, I mean, the therapist can't recognize if she's being lied to, or, I mean, it seems like if she was, the therapist was actually concerned about like an abusive situation, shouldn't there like been some sort of intervention or some sort of, I don't know.
Especially if the, the abuser asked to join a session at some point to discuss things. Like, you think the therapist would be like, yes, bring him in?
Yeah, at this point, it seems like you would almost, you can't even believe her, because the therapist may not be saying that at all.
Yeah.
or she could be making up stories to her therapist, and the therapist is saying that. Either way, you don't know, and nothing that you're hearing is making any sense, and you're seeing it as a repeated pattern in the family. So I could definitely see where you're looking for the nearest exit sign.
Yeah. And so one day I came home from work, and she wasn't even awake 2 minutes before she started fighting with me. And one of our other constant problems was, ever since the beginning of the relationship, I was always being accused of cheating constantly with literally every single female I came across. You know, my female coworker, her husband didn't pick her up from work when we closed the store because he overslept. I waited with her the 45 minutes that it took for him to get there because, you know, I didn't want her to be alone. To my wife, I was fucking her. And, you know, just all those things like that.
Have you always just been attracted to females?
No.
Too?
No. But
she was only jealous of females?
Yes. Yes. I'm definitely majority, like, towards women. Women are great. But yeah, she would be jealous of every single female that I came into contact with. And so at the end, when I said, I want a divorce, the first thing she said was, who are you fucking? and then I said, no one. She was like, then where is this coming from? And, you know, I told her, I'm like, I've tried to come to you so many times. And I told you, this will not work if you keep doing this, and you just keep doing it. So she cried and argued with me and kind of begged me for only about 5 minutes. And then she was like, fine, and left the house. Called her sister to come pick her up. And our roommate at the time was actually her niece. So she woke up her niece and was like, Nick wants a divorce. I'm leaving. That was awkward because
because
she's leaving. I'm going to be in this house with her niece. And even her niece, I heard from the room, you know, like, you know, where the hell is this coming from? I don't know. I was like, I just told you. Like, I just told you why. And so I left. I went to a friend's house after that. And I tried to stay away so that, you know, the niece could have the, or not feel like she has to, like, leave. And I told them that, you know, I would leave the apartment since it's the both of them. But for some reason, they wanted to leave. So I was like, okay. Which left me the problem of finding a roommate. But the aftermath of that divorce was her family definitely believed that I was the abusive one. There were some social media posts posted calling me so. And I got a lot of messages that were definitely still accusing me of cheating and, you know, asking me who I left her for, which, you know, the answer is for me. I left her for me. But that was not an acceptable answer to them.
Sorry about all that. You know, it's always, I think that's what everyone's scared of more than anything when they start to think about the word divorce, is the aftermath, especially because this is a family that, like, one of the, probably sounds like the first family that you found, like, love and acceptance from and stuff. And now they're, you know, accusing you of abuse on social media. So I can't imagine that being a fun time to live through.
No, not really.
Oh, man. So right on. So during this whole time as well, so getting into a little bit of maybe some questions about some trans questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
Were you on, I can't even speak. Were you on testosterone at that time while you were married? Were you going because she knew that's something that you were interested in? Was that something you were pursuing while you guys were still married? Is that something that you got more into after the marriage ended?
There was a time when I was married that I was taking testosterone pellets which now I take shots, which are a lot better and a lot easier. But the pellets are something I had to go to the doctor for every like 4 months. And the doctor would take this like large hollow needle and, you know, insert it in like a fatty area and put these low testosterone pellets, and then the blood, it would get absorbed into the bloodstream over time.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but it's one of the slowest methods of receiving the testosterone. And I was on that probably almost about a year, but I didn't really notice any changes at all.
In anything?
No.
And not in your body or, like, does it affect your personality?
It can give you mood swings, but I mean, okay, so basically when you start testosterone, you're starting a hormone, and, you know, if you're starting estrogen, you know, the other way, you're going through puberty a second time.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously through puberty, you do get like mood swings and stuff like that. With testosterone, you know, aggravation is very common, things like that. So, you know, there was some, but like, as far as my actual personality itself, no, just some mood swings here and there. But, you know, now it's to the point where it's not really doing anything for that.
That year that you were taking the pellets when you were married, though, do you think that that possibly could have like given you a shorter fuse or like less tolerance for the bullshit or something along those lines? I mean, obviously, I'm not trying to blame it on the testosterone, but I'm just wondering, like, during that transition, like, was there, you said that you couldn't notice anything with the pellets, though.
No,
I don't think.
No, the only like thing that may have been able to happen with the pellets was like maybe a little bit of like mustache peach fuzz, but not enough to even really notice too well. As far as like the emotions and stuff like that on the pellets.
I'm sorry, I was about to just say something racist.
Go ahead.
Which I know you went.
Go ahead.
I just don't know if I want to know. Because I was to say, I mean, you are Hispanic though, so I mean, Hispanic ladies kind of deal with that peach fuzz anyway.
There you go, right?
There you go. It's out there.
But like I said, the pellets themselves, I think they were just too slow in acting. And that was also another thing about the sex part is testosterone raises your sex drive. And that was not happening, which my wife was also very upset about because she always wanted to have sex and would, you know, say mean shit when she didn't get it. It wasn't until, I think actually it was right before we separated is when I started taking the shots. But it wasn't until about 4 or 6 months after it that I started actually seeing results from it, including things like mood swings and higher sex drives and stuff like that. Which was just in time for my next relationship, so.
So let's talk about that then. So you're taking the shots now, you're starting to feel the results, starting to see the results. And so your next relationship with another female?
Yes. Yes, they've all been with females.
Let's get that out of the way though, because you said mostly attracted to females. Have you only been with females then?
Yes, as far as relationship goes, only with females. I have sexually been with a couple of guys, but none that I'd be willing to date so far, I guess.
And apparently you weren't into it.
I mean, I was into it, but, you know, not something I need all the time. I would prefer definitely women over men.
All right, so that's why that makes sense. And if she knew that about you, then she wouldn't be threatened by other men, even though you may be attracted to them.
Yeah.
It's not like you'd be going out of your way for...
Not really, no.
Do something behind her back.
No.
Okay, so mood swingy Nick found another boo. So how did this go?
Well, I met her at work. She was a friend. And, you know, we would hang out. We would go play Pokemon Go after work. And stuff like that. And I got her. Yeah, I think I can talk about that on this show. I got her high for the first time. And this guy actually that she liked. And he and I were friends. We all worked at the same place.
Did that go well? Because sometimes it cannot. Sometimes you get somebody high for the first time.
Well.
They may not feel it at all. Sometimes it's like maybe they get too high. So
it went well. I think she didn't get as high as she probably could have. In all honesty, but
That's probably a smart way to go for your first time, though.
But yeah, so this guy and I invited her over, and she came over. We got her high. We watched some TV. And then the second time she came over herself, I got her high, and she got, you know, pretty up there. And she went on for almost 2 hours about ska music, because that's what she listens to. And at that point, I was like, what's ska music? And I got this whole lecture about it. And she couldn't stop laughing throughout it. But, you know, she just kept coming over. We just kept talking. And eventually, you know, we just started physically being involved. And then after about a week of that, we're just like, well, you know, why not date? And at this point, she was my third girlfriend, and I was her very first relationship. So,
wow.
Yeah, no pressure, right?
Was there a big age difference there?
She is 2 years younger than me, I believe.
Okay, not really. She just waited a pretty long time before she started dating.
Yeah, and I guess so.
Nick just sweeping her off her feet.
Yeah, right.
You and Mary Jane.
Yeah, I was gonna say it was definitely
and the ska music.
And the ska music, that's important.
So cool. So again, that's pretty quick. I mean, after a week, but you guys were compatible. So like, did you guys try moving in with each other? I mean, like,
yeah. Sort of, I mean,
how did this relationship go?
So when we were just coworkers, she didn't know anything about me being transgender or anything like that. Huh. I did bring it up. I think right before I like got divorced, because I was talking to somebody else about it, and she was walking through, and I was like, yeah, she might as well know, right? And so she knew about it at that point, and we discussed it more when we started, you know, physically doing stuff. But she had no issues with it. Her family didn't know for the longest time, actually, just because she introduced me as Nick, and that was it. Which was pretty cool. They were also very loving and accepting when they did find out, and I still think only like half of them know. I don't even think all of them know, which is pretty cool. And they were a really good family. But so yeah, we started dating, and since obviously I had, at this point I found a roommate, but you know, more money definitely couldn't hurt that. So I was like, do you want to move in, I guess? And so after about a month, which I know was pretty quick, she was like, yeah, sure. And so she ended up moving into my apartment with me and this other guy. And since we worked at the same place, same shift, it, you know, worked out pretty well. We would go work a third shift, and we come back, we'd sleep. We bought a puppy, which is the dog I have now. She actually bought him for me as a birthday gift, so I was excited. And I think she did mostly because my ex-wife took the dog, and I love dogs, I do. So I was really sad that there were no more pets in the house. And so she moved in probably about a month and a half after we started like being involved.
Okay, and how long did you guys date?
A year and a half.
And did that kind of dissolve naturally, or
no, she fell for somebody else at work, so that's, now they're together.
Well, I guess that's kind of naturally.
I guess, yeah, but you know, it wasn't a fun breakup.
No, it's not nothing. Nobody wants to be rejected, so
yeah,
that sucks. How long ago was that?
January 9th of this year.
Okay, so. Coming up on a year.
Coming up, yeah.
A couple months away. Yeah, about 9 months ago. All right, so broke up with your last year's relationship 9 months ago. So what's the dating life been like for Nick since then? Been on Tinder a lot? Were we swiping right? What you got going on?
I have the profiles on a few places, like Tinder and
Bumble or whatever they are.
Yeah, Bumble. There's another one I have on my phone somewhere. But the thing is, I make the profiles. I'm on them for like a week, and then I just don't give a fuck, because there's something about online dating that just sucks. Or, you know, people that just want to have conversations, but they're very shitty conversations.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I obviously I've been married for the last 10 years. So they didn't have online dating. It wasn't a thing around when I was dating. It was just basically you have to go and talk to somebody face to face. But what's your biggest hangups then with, what have you found with online dating that doesn't work for you or why you don't like it?
Probably that the conversations suck. Like I like conversations. I do. But you know, if you're just going to say, hey, hi. And you know, if I don't feel like you're trying to keep the conversation going, then I lose complete interest because, you know, I want to know if we're compatible. I do want to meet eventually. So like some people, they don't want to do that. They're like, oh, let's just trade Snapchats and that's it. I don't want to do that. I do have like a Grindr profile as well, which, you know, I have actually had like a few dates off, you know, these apps. There's another app called Whisper that's all anonymous mostly. It's like local friends I found some pretty good smoking buddies off that one.
Talk to me about like Grindr and what that's like, because isn't that, I mean, obviously that's the gay version of Tinder, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Only no one really uses it for relationships.
Okay. You can find both male and female there, obviously, or you can find all the spectrum. Like, I mean, as far, because I have gay friends and I know that like they use Grindr for, you know, for their hookups or whatever, but I don't know what if there's females on there at all, and you're mostly interested in females, so you're able to find like that type of compatibility on there, or the companionship, I should say.
No, there's rarely females on there, and most of the time they're like trans women. Which I mean, I would date a trans woman. That's fine, obviously. Like, I don't judge that.
That'd be weird if you did. I'd get into that a little bit.
Yeah, right. Definitely have to ask more questions. But no, it's just, you know, like I said, I seem to enjoy, as of right now, I seem to enjoy guys more physically than I do in a relationship. But at the same time, I'd be open to having a relationship with a guy. I just haven't come across a guy that I would be willing to date, or at the time it just wouldn't have worked. So but I mean, I have had sex with guys before, and you know, I do enjoy it, but it's not something that I really do often. So like, I have these apps, they just sit there though for the most part.
And obviously, I mean, I don't know how that works, but I mean, you put everything you're looking for on that, and then do you have to like pretty much reveal to, you know, that you're a trans girl right away? It kind of seems.
I threw that right in the bio, and just because some people are, you know, that's a hard no for them. They don't want to deal with trying to be with someone who's transgender. And they just don't want to do it. So it's a way to filter that out, I guess. And then I am very specific in my bio for that, but I do have some people that like to ignore it, and they'll message me with, you know, really crude questions and stuff like that, or things that I specifically said I don't want.
Like wanting to see a dick pic or something.
No, something no, because like I'm that. Female to male. That's not what they want to see.
Well, I'm saying if they ignore your bio, oh. I mean, you're present, you know,
yeah,
pretty male.
Yeah, so. If they ignore the bio, but if they read the bio, then sometimes I get those really inappropriate questions where they're not curious, but they're just being rude. And that's annoying.
It seems like you get those assholes on, you know, like no matter what, there's gonna be those people that just send me a pic, just send me a pic.
Yeah. Yeah. Or not only that, or they'll, and I think what I hate most is when, you know, they will actually carry on a conversation and they, you know, maybe those, cause I like to give second chances, cause you know, I've met some people that actually, you know, honor it once they hear what I like. So like, not to be too vulgar, but what I get is, you know, oh, send me a pussy pic. And I'm like, no. And I explain, I don't use that part of myself. You know, being with me would be just like with any other guy, and other guys don't have vaginas. So, you know, I explain a packer to them. I explain how all that works. And, you know, and then they'll be like, oh, okay, I understand. conversation will continue. They seem to be pretty cool. They're like, yo, let's meet for coffee. Cool, sounds great. And then they'll be like, you know, if things go well, you know, would you want to come over? Possibly if things go well. And then they'll be like, I want to fuck your pussy. And it's just like, well, that's a block. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's so I get a lot of those sometimes, which is another reason why the app just sits there, because I just don't feel like dealing with people. It seems to work a lot better when I tend to just meet
Renee
someone.
And Laura need to get on their invention fast.
Yes.
Sooner than later.
Yeah, I that's
can,
awesome.
Can we joke about that a little bit?
Or no, definitely. Let's do it. I love it.
Okay. So that just came up today in our Marco Polo guys, and I'll go ahead and plug that. We got to plug that in every episode, obviously. And if you haven't joined now, it's for $5 a month now. You can join in the conversation. Today, it was very interesting. I came on and listened to Renee. If you remember, Renee, our foreigner from Eindhoven, was speaking with Nick. And I think like probably for the first time that you guys actually had like an actual conversation.
Yeah.
In the group.
Yeah.
And his timetables are all screwy, and he was homesick from work today. So, and it's pretty cool the way Marco Polo works, because it was a conversation that happened like an hour or so before I got on there, but I'm just catching up, and they're, you know, getting to know each other and everything. And then it sparked a conversation because Renee is an engineer, and you know, he's asking some very personal questions, so I can get into all of them. But since we're talking about, you know, body parts and Nick becoming a man and wanting all the full man abilities, and Renee is an engineer, and we have another engineer in the group as well. And so they have been commissioned to make the best, most working penis that any trans man could ever want. And so let's talk about some of the functionalities of what is out there now, that it and its limitations, and what the Nick 2000 is gonna have.
Okay, so like as of right now, I've been on hormones for about 2.5 years. I got the top surgery a year ago, so the next step would probably be legally changing like names and stuff like that. But the next like surgical step would be the bottom surgery, and as of right now, it seems like my best options would be, because what they do is they remove skin from like the forearm or the thigh, and that's what they use to make your penis. And which is pretty cool, because I'm thinking maybe I can get a tattoo. So then when they transfer it over, I think we'll have a tattoo.
Nice. have it say mom with a heart.
Yes, definitely. So they do that, and then it seems like you could have like a pump or something like that to cause erections.
Or obviously it's mechanical. It can't work off of like your heartbeat. That would be a kind of
that would be cool.
And unless you got excited like in class or at work, and all of a sudden like I promise I'm not
yeah, or
like every other 17-year-old boy.
Yeah, right. Then get the full experience there. or it seems like the other option, which is probably the one I'll go for, there's like a flexible rod, so you can just position it to how you want, which would probably be the best option, at least I think. And then they put silicone testicles on and stuff like that as well. And people, it seems like the reviews are people, if everything goes well, can have sex and, you know, orgasm fully about 6 months after the surgery, which I think is pretty impressive. I thought for sure it'd take longer. But also part of me is thinking, you know, well, what if I do wait like another 5 years? What wonderful advancements in technology
might be out there? Exactly. Yeah.
Will there be then? Which is why this Marco Polo group today was so fascinating.
So, yeah, that's interesting. So I'm assuming you've done your research on this, and you can achieve arousal yourself too during intercourse with this, you know, appendage that isn't like, I mean, there's no feeling in it, correct?
Correct.
I mean,
yeah.
It's mechanical.
Yeah.
But the way it's designed, obviously it's designed so you will experience arousal. Like, that's fascinating to me.
After the surgery, it says like, you know, feeling I think feeling starts returning fully, I think, within about the month after or so, but still, like, extremely sensitive and things like that. So, like, there's feeling, which I think is fascinating. It seems like one of the shortcomings, though, is ejaculating isn't, like, ejaculating. Like, yeah, sure, like, fluid can come out, but it's not going to be, like, you know, regular. So that's another thing that I was like, that's what our engineers need to work on. How can
that's gonna be patent, by the way, so yeah.
So we want to ejaculate.
I mean, isn't that what every man wants?
Exactly, right? and also, how cool would it be if you could fill it to how you want? You know, you don't have to ever worry about the flavor. Like, she can choose she can choose what flavor she wants.
I mean, I guess you know your imagination is your limit at that point.
Well, I also used to work at a sex store, so I already have all these ideas and all these thoughts of other products. It's like, you know what, that could be used with that. And I think it's very interesting.
Well, there you go. So that, and I'm assuming that's not a cheap surgery either.
No,
so.
No, it is not. And actually, before that, I would have to get a hysterectomy, which is fine because I have no intentions or plans of having kids that way. So, you know, but I'd have to get that first before the bomb surgery. So technically, that's two surgeries, which sounds pricey.
Is that something that your run-of-the-mill insurance plan probably isn't something that covers, huh?
No, but I do believe Medicare does it. Medicaid, one of them, I know, does the bottom surgery. It's like something new. Like, I think last year, they just put on.
Cool.
So that's exciting.
Yeah. Well, Nick, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for opening up, talking about, you know, man, just trans issues, the whole trans process, and also just, you know, marriage and divorce and all that stuff. No matter if you're male or female or anything in between, it's hard. And I just thank you for your candidness. And anything else that you want to say before we wrap things up here?
Well, I'm definitely looking for my next relationship. So if any of you guys are interested listening to this, message Omar.
Yeah. Well, I'll say Nick's a very attractive man, and if you're looking, you know, want to get to know him, or you just want to talk to him because he's, you know, like a great conversationalist as well, join Marco Polo or message me, and I'll maybe be the gateway for playing Dr. Hookup over here. So, thanks again, brother, and I'll see you here in a little bit, Marco.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I'll see you in a bit, then.
All right. See you, man.
See you.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.